Hey, what's up, folks? Welcome to another edition of The Winning Drive. I am Lifetime Longhorn Rob Babers, joined, of course, by Lifetime Longhorn CJ Vogel and the coach, former high school football coach at Brownwood, Burnett, Capel, Belton, Rotan, played college football at Abilene Christian, also coached there multiple stints, was on the staff at the University of Texas for five different seasons as well. He's a man of many talents. He's also, you can find his work over at ShipleyRanches.com. It's Coach Bob Shipley. What's going on, Coach?
Hey, man, doing good. Got my umbrella ready for Saturday, man. It's all good.
Ain't no doubt. Yeah, I hope the weather cooperates. We'll see. We're going to just act like those bad weather reports are not even out there. We just gonna act like it ain't happening, and that way, hopefully, we'll get some spring football. CJ, what's going on, brother? What are your thoughts? I'm sure you're hoping that these weather guys, which usually, and gals, by the way, which are usually about 50% accurate, hopefully this is the inaccurate weather report we're talking about on Saturday.
Yeah, hopefully they're calling heads and it ends up tails, you know. I'm hoping that for whatever the forecast brings, it's a sunny sky or at least dry enough to play some good football, get the quarterbacks out there slinging it a little bit. I'm ready for whatever comes Saturday. I think it'll be a good time. Hopefully it's dry.
Yeah, hopefully it is. And hopefully if the weather does come, hopefully it comes later on in the day after the spring game festivities are already done. So, of course, we're talking a lot about the spring game. We're going to take all of your questions, as many of them as we can. Super chats, of course, disrupt the show, come to the front of the line. We'll always take that, and we're grateful for them. We'll start off the show, as a matter of fact. We're talking talent acquisition. The transfer portal is open. The transfer portal giveth and it taketh away. In the Longhorns, they're trying to get in some of those great defensive linemen potentially in the transfer portal. So we'll get into that. My man CJ's got some details. He already broke the story that Bill Norton was going to be on campus for the spring game. He's got some other reports about those interior defensive linemen potentially that could be of interest, of great interest to the University of Texas during the transfer portal. So we'll get into that. We'll also talk about the spring game, our expectations. We'll give you one crazy prediction that we're thinking about the spring game too. We'll also dive into some practice reports. My man CJ has got some info, some nuggets about some practice reports coming up for the guys. So we'll talk about the player availability. You had three players meet with the media today. We'll address their comments and talk about what they said about some of the things that they're seeing about their teammates, about where they are in their progress in spring ball. So we got a ton to get into, lots to discuss on the show today. But of course, you're the most important part of it. So your comments, all of your questions, please throw them out there and we'll get to as many of them as we can. All right, CJ, gentlemen, and coach, let's start with the transfer portal and then we'll get to some spring ball stuff and some practice nuggets and also get to the player availability. But the transfer portal opened up a couple of days ago and it's already starting to heat up around the country. We know that the Longhorns do have a need at interior D-line. They already brought in Savea via the interior D-line. And now potentially my man Bobby Burns said yesterday that he believes Texas could potentially be bringing in as many as two more interior D-line in the transfer portal if they find the right guys. CJ, what are you hearing about in the transfer portal? What players are of interest to Texas? What players could be compatible with what they need right now?
Yeah, I think two at the minimum. You know, three, wow, I don't think is entirely off the table. I don't think necessarily that's going to be the goal for Texas to go out and add three more interior defensive linemen. But there are certainly three guys that they're very interested in. Of course, Bill Norton, the interior defensive lineman from Arizona, will be on campus for the spring game this Saturday. We've known that. I broke the news earlier this week with On Texas Football that he will be visiting Saturday for the spring game. Familiar with Johnny Nansen, played with Tia Savea. There's obviously familiarity in that system. Played a lot of snaps, about 50% of his snaps over the A-gap a year ago, the other 50% right inside the B gap. So a guy that's very familiar on the interior. But today, two additional names enter the portal. I guess one was yesterday, but two names that Texas should certainly be aware of. The first is Dominic Williams, a former freshman All-American, all Big 12 honoree a year ago at TCU, entered the portal today, played 477 snaps a year ago, 53% over the A gap. So you look about what you're trying to add from the portal, that's exactly where Texas is looking, is a guy just like Dominic Williams, very disruptive on the interior, had 19 pressures and 3 sacks a year, or 4.5 sacks year ago, excuse me, really, really active when it comes to getting into the backfield and being disruptive in the middle. This is a guy who will be, you know, pursued by a number of big programs. Of course, it is reported that he is expected on campus at Oklahoma this upcoming weekend for their spring game. Right now, Texas is looking to also get in the fight for him as well and get him down to campus before the end of the portal window. And, of course, today, UCLA interior defensive lineman Jay Toya entered the portal as well. Familiar with Big 12 play a little bit. His older brother was Mr. Ika. I don't know how to say his first name. The big interior defensive lineman at Baylor who drafted by the Browns. So he's in the NFL. Younger brothers at San Jose State as well. Another interior defensive lineman. Jay, a part of a really good UCLA run defense a year ago, which was which was a top five run defense in the country. A big piece of that, 359 snaps, 40% of that right around there came inside the A gap. So again, Texas is looking at big time bodies right now. That's a name I'm told that Texas is very much interested in at the moment is Jay Toya. And of course, with Dominic Williams, it'll be interesting to see what kind of fight they put up with him as well, considering Bill Norton is already scheduled to come on a campus. So those are the three guys right now that Texas is circling around on their interior defensive line. Rod, to me, Sarkisian knows what he has everywhere else, and he's looking at this interior defensive line spot thinking that's not going to be the area that prevents me from playing for, competing for, and possibly winning an SEC championship or a national championship in 2024.
Hey, and isn't there a connection also with Jay Toya with Johnny Nansen as well, right? Because of their time at UCLA together, Johnny Nansen being a D-line, was it the D-line coach there and coached him? So your Johnny Nansen connection could end up bringing in potentially, is if you bring in Bill Norton and also bring in Jay Toya, you could bring in three interior D-linemen just this year from that connection alone if you add in Saveya. And what is the that is that the irony of that that is that you talk about timing, the one position of dire need for Texas, Johnny Nansen just having to have these personal connections with as a coach, that is amazing. That is, I don't, coach, I mean, I know it's about it ain't what you know, it's who you know, but that is a hell of a payoff, an added benefit of getting a guy like Johnny Nansen. What are your thoughts though, coach, about the, what does that say if Coach Sark ends up bringing in, and you heard CJ say, but two, hell, man, he wouldn't be even shocked if it's three. I heard Bobby say yesterday he thinks they're going to bring in two interior D linemen. He already brought in Saveya, and then make four via the portal. What does that say about the evaluation of the players that they have here on campus playing that position and what they've seen so far during spring? Is that an indictment potentially on the development of those guys, or is this his coach making sure he's got contingency plans and insurance policy in place?
Well, I wish you'd asked me that question on Monday, because I'll know a whole lot more after the spring game.
That's fair, coach. That is,
you know, we all know you can't have enough. You can't have too many good defensive linemen. I mean, you know, especially guys that somebody on the staff has a relationship with already and knows. So it's not like you're just grabbing guys off the portal and just hoping they fit into the culture. Yeah. You know, this is a guy who knows them, is familiar with them. I think we, you know, we've already got one. I look at two more. I don't see three more, but I mean, anything's possible. I would say if you bring in three, that's quite an indictment on your current staff, your current roster. Two, maybe you just can't pass up, you know, two guys like that. If they had to choose between one of the two, you know, I think part of the TCU kid, maybe, you know, certainly stat wise, I haven't seen the film on either one of those guys, but, you know, he's certainly very active, you know, for the TCU defense. But I wouldn't go so far to say it's an indictment, but I do know when you lose the guys that we lost in there, defensive line is obviously an area of concern. And it's one that, you know, obviously Sark and his staff are going to make sure that they have all the bases covered on that. And they've looked under every rock that there is to find the very best fit they can to fill in for some vacancies we may have.
Yeah, no doubt. Sark wants to. There's no doubt wants to give himself options. I think they want a money. They want a money ball that position. There's no question right now, and they want to see which one of these guys ends up being the best solution for him. An A gap disruptor. I love the breakdown by CJ giving us the A gap play percentages of these guys and how often that they play the A gaps, because that's what Texas needs. They got a couple of guys, a few guys that can play that three technique. They need somebody that can be over the ball and be a nose nose tackle for him. Let me ask you this. Bill Norton, Jay Toya, both of those guys, 1 year of eligibility remaining for both of them. Is that the case? But Dominique Williams is, what is he, a sophomore? Or how many years of eligibility remaining for him? Just –
he has up to 3 years to play.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm not sure he's the guy that you'll see on campus for all 3 years. Should wow. he, wherever he ends up, he's a talented football player. He was disruptive a year ago. He made life very difficult for Jake Majors and the guards on the interior of the defensive line. That's a guy that has NFL written all over him. Wherever he ends up, he's that type of player.
Yeah. I mean, that's the guy's coach. I mean, I talked to Jake Majors about this. You know, which one of those guys, you know, give you the most trouble? And he said, oh, man, the nose. The guys that line up right on top of me. And they just want to give you issues all day long. And guys who can hold the point right there, be stout at the point of attack, and even reset the line of scrimmage like a Byron Murphy or a Tavondre Sweat did. Texas is going to miss those guys and hoping to be able to fill that void with some of these guys via the transfer portal. So Texas will be busy in the transfer portal. As CJ and Bobby said, they're looking to add two. Hell, maybe even three of those guys. They had three. I'm with you, Coach. That's an indictment on the group. And yeah. They ended up having three of them. Because that'd be four total. That'd be four in addition to Saveo, you also added two.
Yeah. Well, I know for a fact that this staff, the standard is very simple when you're recruiting high school players or portal players. Can this guy help us win a national championship? That's it. That is – now, obviously, there are going to be a few spots where you need some depth. And you need to have some people that are role players. But, you know, the bottom line is in recruiting every position and kids at every level, whether it's high school, junior college, transfer portal, can this kid help me win? Can this player help us win the national championship? Is he a vital piece of the puzzle that we can put together to win a national championship? And so if we're offering these guys, then I think it's very safe to say that the coaches have done their homework and feel like this is a guy that can take us to compete for a national championship at that position.
Yeah. I love the way you put that. Yeah, can this guy help us win a title? If he can't, or if it's a dispute, then move on. Move along. Makes it easy. Let's talk about the player availability. And keep your questions coming, guys. We'll hit all the questions, I promise, as many of them as we can. I promise you, we're just going to get to a couple of topics here first. But I want to talk about the player availability that the players had earlier today. You had Alfred Collins, Baron Sorrell, Malik Muhammad were the three players that got a chance to speak to the media. CJ, you were there on campus. Anything that stood out the players spoke about that caught your eye or you thought was intriguing, worthy of discussing?
Yeah, I mean, we got to talk to three guys. It was Baron Sorrell, Alfred Collins, and Manny Muhammad, like you said, Rod. Manny Muhammad had something really interesting to say, and I'd like to get your thoughts on it specifically. Of course, talking about his group in the secondary, he says, we feel old, but we're young. You know, there's a good balance there.
Yeah.
And, you know, you see some of the older guys, not even necessarily old, but guys with a lot of experience. Andrew Makuba, Jahdae Barron, Michael Taft, you know, Derek Williams, and now Manny have each played 2 years or will be entering year two. Terrence Brooks has a number of snaps. But because of what was almost or felt like an exodus of defensive backs from a year ago with six guys entering the portal or departing for the NFL draft, now you have a whole lot of new faces. You have four true freshmen on campus that were early enrollees. You have a fifth coming in June. There's a lot of youth there, despite all of that experience. So it's a good balance, really, of guys who, you know, have certainly been on the field. They know what it's like, but also a number of guys looking to get their feet wet and get on the field for the first time. The communication aspect of things that I thought was really interesting from Manny Muhammad was, yeah, I think that's one of our strengths, and that has to be a strength. I think I look to a guy like Michael Taft specifically as a guy that vocalizes just about everything in the back end of that secondary, has been around the block a number of times, had to fight for his role with the Texas Longhorns, of course, has fended off a number of really talented players at the position, figures to be a big part of it moving forward, and of course was a great leader at Austin Westlake, and that's carried over to Texas. That to me is a guy I expect to see a lot of and hear a lot more of as we get closer to the season. But Andrew Makuba's name was mentioned as well, just kind of being that vocal veteran. When communication's not necessarily there, it's Makuba kind of setting guys right, understanding where guys need to be, and just making sure that busts aren't common in that secondary, which, again, with all the youth back there, kind of mixing it in with guys who have been around the block, very important in that back end of the Texas secondary.
Yeah, Coach, I thought situationally last year, that's where Texas actually was exposed at times. You go look at the two-minute defense, which at times an issue for Texas. They were exposed there. A lot of two-minute defenses being able to communicate quickly and being hive-minded, everybody being on the same page. That time Texas was not all the DBs were not on the same page. So you had some coverage busts. You had some miscommunications, and you had just some missed tackles in that situation. If you go look at the third downs when Texas had to go up against teams that wanted to use bunch formations where they had to pass off receivers in coverage, times Texas had difficulty with that. With routes over the middle, passing off those routes to interior defenders. Texas had issues just being on the same page. And that's all communication. That's all guys talking to one another prior to the snap and your pre-snap. But then after the snap, you really can't necessarily speak. You can yell out keys to guys, but they may not hear. You have to just be on the same page based on your prior communication. The Texas secondary really wasn't that. And I think a confident secondary is a communicative secondary. It's one that talks a lot back there, whether they're talking trash to the opponent or they're talking to one another to confirm what they're seeing.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. And you look at last season, and when we did have difficulty doing that, I think a lot of times I'd have to go back and watch some tape, but the best I can remember, a lot of those times were new wrinkles that offensive coordinators put in that
– yeah.
That we weren't ready for it, you know, and that's the thing, as you well know, Rod, as a defensive back, you can study all the film you want, you can look at tendencies, you can look at, you know, everything that you want, all the stats you want. The bottom line is, no coach is going to go in a game without any new wrinkles or especially if they've seen situations and coverages that maybe the way our guys are rotating or the way that they're the technique they're using or whatever, they can see some fallacies in that and maybe some weak spots. And so those offensive coordinators are going to attack our defense based on what they've seen us do well and what they've seen us do not so well, and maybe not knowing for sure how we'll respond because they haven't seen our secondary respond to certain schemes or patterns or whatever. And so they throw stuff at you that you haven't seen yet. And so I think that's just part of a young secondary that's just, you know, growing and continuing to mature and develop. But I know Sark well enough to know that they've worked on all that stuff relentlessly through the offseason. After the end of the season, it was obviously something when you look at the secondary that has to be fixed. And so I'm sure they've done a lot of things this spring, but you know, there's just like us, for example, you know, we're going to throw stuff at OU, for example. They haven't seen us do, you know, and we're going to make them look bad in some areas. And so that's just the chess game that you play in football, as you well know.
Yeah. And if it goes back to the comment initially that CJ brought up, the they're an old secondary, but they feel like they're a young secondary, but they feel like an old secondary. Because the more reps you have in that secondary, in that system, and the more you've seen as a player, when you are presented with something you have not necessarily prepared for on film, that was not necessarily in practice, you still know how to respond. You still know how to make the right decision. You don't abandon your technique, your fundamentals at that time, and you know how to make the proper adjustments. You don't panic as a player. So that's hopefully that'll happen because you're right, Coach. Everybody's going to break tendency when you go into a game, especially big games, based on what the opponent is doing. But hopefully if these guys are seasoned veterans, least they got that experience. They won't panic. They'll make the right decision, and they'll be able to win that chess match within the game, but also that chess match, the players, that one-on-one chess match that you have out on the field too. So that's a really good point. And I, one thing that Manny Muhammad said that I like too, I think someone asked him, why is he so, he seems very confident. Where does that come from? And he said, I've been playing corner since I was in sixth grade. And I thought about that because I was like, man, when did I start playing corner officially? And by the time I was a sophomore starting like Manny is, and I started playing corner in like eighth grade. And then in ninth grade became like a corner, basically kind of full time. So I started studying the position of corner. So by the time I got to be a sophomore in college, I'd been playing corner full time, six going on 7 years, somewhere around there. If Manny's been playing corner since he was in sixth grade, I mean, the dude's basically going on, I guess, eighth year playing corner, essentially, when you think about it, right? So that, to me, that maybe that is why he's such a kind of a technician at the position, where he studies the position. He's been studying it for a long time. A lot of guys early on in their football careers, they don't get specialized, right, Coach? The great athletes, you know, CJ, they're playing all over the place. They're playing everywhere. And I'm not saying he didn't play both sides of the ball, but he claims that, no, I started specializing in cornerback in sixth grade. Hell, Trevon Diggs didn't start specializing in playing cornerback until he's like a sophomore in college and then became an all-pro in the league. I don't know. I feel like that's an advantage for him, CJ. I feel like that actually is an advantage for Manny Muhammad being I was probably a junior in college by the time I got that kind of experience. And he, maybe that is where the confidence comes from, but he's confident in his technique and his skill set at that position.
Yeah, I would have to imagine so. And certainly in that district, you know, at South Oak Cliff, you play some of the best area schools in the entire, you know, state of Texas, but also in specifically Dallas, there's not a time in which you're really going through a lull at corner, at wide receiver, talent-wise. So, you know, he's seeing guys all the way going back to middle school where they're going to be playing D1 Power 5 football at the wide receiving spot, testing him time and time again, that simply, you know, to put it lightly, it's not a drop-off whenever he's, you know, moving up to the college football ranks. He understands what that talent's like. He understands what movements, what concepts, what scheme basically he's going against because of the talent in that region, specifically at South Oak Cliff when he was there winning back-to-back state championships. So that's really encouraging as well. And it certainly helps, like you said, Rod, he doesn't have really the college experience, but the position experience certainly more advanced than, you know, say a guy like Jelani McDonald, who was playing wide receiver, quarterback, safety, yeah, linebacker at times at Wake O'Connelly because they simply needed him to. You know, at South Oak Cliff, he was asked, yeah, just go man down that left side of the field. Well, we've got the bodies to play linebacker, safety, help you over the top. We can rush the passer. Just make sure that that guy that you're covering doesn't get open.
Yep.
That's beneficial in its own right. And it certainly helps, you know, kind of speed along that progression a little bit.
Yeah. Hey, you show me, Rod, am I right? You show me a cornerback that's not confident, and I'll show you a cornerback that's not going to be a very good player. Hey, you got to have a short memory. You got to be able, when you get beat, sometimes somebody's going to moss you, and you say, I'll give you that. That's a heck of a play. I'll give you that. But it ain't going to happen again, you know.
Yep. Right.
You have to have great confidence. And you have to have a short memory. But I also want to say this. I think it's so good, as they say, iron sharpens iron. And it reminds me back when we were DBU, and Jordan was a senior in high school, and he was committed to Texas, but he was kind of leaning to Tech because Leach was talking to him all the time about catching all these balls, you know. Oh. And so he was really – he was really about ready to flip. And then Major Applewhite, I'll never forget this, Major Applewhite talked to him, and he said, look, man, here's the deal. If you want to go catch a ton of balls, go to Texas Tech. That, I mean, you will. You'll break all kinds of records, you know. Go to Texas Tech. If you want to go against the best DBs in the country to hone and sharpen your skills, to develop you for the NFL, You better come to Texas. So you better look at your goals and see what they are. And that clicked in Jordan's mind. He goes, you know what? You're right. College is not my goal. NFL is my goal. I want to go against the best DBs in the country. And so after that, he shut Tech down. And I see that with our DBs and our receivers. Man, there's nothing better for our DBs than to go against that group of receivers they're going against every day in practice.
And the ones they went against last year, Coach.
Yeah, exactly. Right?
Two guys that may be drafted in the first round. And, yeah, if you're an NFL scouts, I guarantee you they're probably asking Coach if they're scouting any of those DBs. They're asking Coach, hey, can I see some of that film from a few years ago? Let me see that film from when they're going up against Xavier Worthy and A.D. Mitchell in practice. I want to watch some of that Isaiah Bond. That's just the real stuff. My man CB, I remember the glory years at Texas practices were harder than the game, right? I always say they were, man. And I think this team may get – they may be getting to that point around 01 and 02 that our roster was so stacked that – getting back to what you just brought up, Coach, about the wide receivers and the DBs, I mean, we were going against Roy Williams and B.J. Johnson and Sloane Thomas every day. Really good wide receivers, all conference NFL caliber guys. And, hell, they got a chance to go up against Quentin Jammer and myself, Nathan Basher every day. And we went at it. Our one-on-one periods were – that was entertaining. That was entertainment. It was some helmets off, trash talking, Coach having to restrain guys, get back, talking about quarterbacks having too much. It was fun. And back then, our training camp 2 days was open to the public. So it wasn't like it is now where it's closed. And we had people cheering. People cheering and screaming. Oh, yeah. Oh, man, Rob B, you just got done dirty out there. It was pumped up, man. It was legit. It was legit doing training camp. It was fun. But you're right, Coach, about that. I think that's where you want to get to where – you know, and you go into the SEC, so it'll be a little bit different. But, you know, Georgia's at the point now. When does Georgia play an opponent that has a roster as good as the one that these guys are going up against every day in practice? Bama? Maybe the Bama game? They play the Bama game? That might be it. Then to get to the college football playoff. So maybe three, four games a year, and that's if they make it all the way to the college football playoff. There ain't, Ohio State's the same way. Now, Ohio State practices, they don't play many games where maybe the Michigan game. All right, maybe Penn State, but they ain't playing mini games every year where they got a roster that's as stacked as theirs. So practices, that's where the real competition is happening. You got more NFL competition happening between guys in different positions at the Ohio State practice than you may have in some of the game, most of the games they play, unless it's Michigan or unless it's Penn State. And that's how Texas should be, unless they play in Oklahoma is one of those schools, of course, unless it's Oklahoma, unless it's a Georgia, unless it's an Alabama, somebody like that. So, no, good conversation there. All right, before we move on here, let me thank one of our wonderful sponsors. We are very grateful for all of our sponsors. We have great sponsors, but now we have a new one. And how about this? With Mother's Day coming up, don't want to forget about that. You may be like me, looking for the right gift, the perfect gift for the woman in your life. I got a brand new mom, but also got a new mother in our house, 6-month-old. So I'm paying close attention as well. So make sure you check out thecarrotconcierge.com. That's thecarrotconcierge.com. Jody Reynolds is a personal jeweler, and she is the Carrot Concierge. You can see some of her beautiful creations here. You can use the QR code on the screen to see even more, or visit her on Instagram or her website, thecarrotconcierge.com as well. Jody's an Austin resident, a Texas fan, and her family listens to On Texas Football, which we appreciate. Jody prides herself in providing personal service. She takes the extra step to make sure your lady gets exactly what she wants. And because she doesn't have the overhead of a storefront, she often gets higher quality inventory at the lowest of prices, as much as 30% less than what you see at a jewelry store. Jody has a number of different tennis bracelets, rings, necklaces, and more. All beautiful jewelry, all personalized for you and yours. Check out thecarrotconcierge.com and visit her website, or give her a call or text and take care of that special someone in your life. All right, got Mother's Day coming up. Don't want to forget about that. Or you got a birthday, anniversary, anything like that, check out thecarrotconcierge.com. And thank you very much for your support. All right, how about this? I got a question randomly about the spring game. Then we'll hit a couple of questions here in the chat as well. Give me one crazy prediction about the spring game, gentlemen. Something crazy, something wild that nobody would ever expect. Just off the cuff, totally outside the box. Crazy prediction about the spring game. And don't say something about don't be a downer saying it's going to get canceled or something. All right? Don't do it because of the rain. Don't do that.
I was going to say to send everybody home and go to go to the bubble and have a spring game all by itself.
Hey, it just let LHA cover it. That's about
it. That's right.
Everybody get to go home. You might be right about that, Coach. Unfortunately, you might be right about that, and Longhorn fans will take it. But give me a crazy prediction. I'll start it out. Crazy prediction. I'll go crazy prediction. Out of all the quarterbacks, because we're not going to see much of Quinn Ewers, I say three series max. And we don't even know how much he's going to throw the football. They may hand it off most of the damn time when Quinn's in there. And then you're going to see a lot of Arch, but we don't know how they're going to format it. So Arch could be working with mix and match O-line or the second, third team O-line. Like, we don't know how he's going to do that too. How about this? Trey Owens looks as impressive, if not more impressive, than any other QBs. There you go. Crazy prediction.
Ooh.
Trey Owens looks really good out there. Look, just lights it up. Boom. There you go. Okay. He's got good receivers to throw to because they're so damn deep that he's still going to be throwing the quality receivers, and they're going to be trying to show out. There you go. Crazy prediction. See, it's crazy. It's crazy. Oh, that is crazy. That's what I like, Subs. I like that. Six total picks by the second. Crazy prediction. There you go. That means either Arch, Quinn, or help Trey Owens. They had some bad days out there.
Owens having a bad day if that's the case.
Yeah, I don't know Owens what Stubbs. I don't know what Stubbs is smoking, but
I guarantee you, look, if they get to three picks, Sark gonna rig it. He's gonna start rigging it then.
Sark ain't gonna be fun to be around if that happens.
That is true.
What you got, CJ?
I look at Zeno Umeozulu as a guy that gets multiple sacks. I'll go there. I think he's going to impress a bit. Listen, he was a guy 6'5", got extremely long arms. The wingspan is there. We saw him in Orlando right before he got to campus. It looked like he really started filling out his frame deep into, you know, the Christmas, January time frame around then. Gets to campus up to 255, 256. I think he's going to be a bit of a force off the edge. I think you hear his name, you know, with the sacker, two or maybe even three, I think he'll get after.
I like that. And if that's the case, damn, they're deep on the edge. They're deep at the edge defender position, man. That's why those guys are transferring. I see why. Yeah. He ends up getting 2-3 sacks in spring game, along with Ethan Burke and my man Baron Sorrell. And, you know, obviously Colin Simmons in there too, Trey Moore. That's deep. Bo Tex, though, says Arch completes 70% of his passes in the rain. That's right.
They better hope that offensive line backs him up. Yeah, you got to give him some time if that's going to be the case.
Oh, he's going to run for 70 yards in the rain. That's what he's going to do.
That's probably a safer bet, Rob.
because even Sark's
quarterback, he can run for days.
Yeah, and basically Sark admitted that he runs a little too much for Sark. Didn't Sark, y'all heard that when Sark mentioned that? He almost implied he runs a little too much for me. I want him to stay in the pocket and make some throws. Oh, but Arch likes to run. Arch likes to run, baby. He wants to run.
He does. I actually picked it up from Sarkisian on Tuesday when he said he had his best practice of the spring. Why was that? Well, he's stepping up in the pocket. So there it is. He's not, you know, sitting there quick to bolt out, you know, and letting his legs do the work. So that's the next step for Arch Manning. Because let's, again, look at where Arch was in high school. He wasn't playing behind 300-pound offensive linemen. He wasn't playing, you know, behind 280-pound offensive linemen. He was basically playing behind me with a backpack on. You know, that's how much weight those guys were blocking for him in front of him down there in New Orleans. So getting used to guys in front of him, creating that pocket and trusting the five guys is going to be big for his development. Again, last year we didn't see a whole lot of that in live situations. He was working with guys where – still trying to figure out what their strengths were on the offensive line. Very young, very inexperienced. Now that we'll get some, you know, a look or two, probably I would expect a series or two with Arch in that first group. Then you get a true idea of what it's like for him to play behind a Kelvin Banks, a Cam Williams, a DJ Campbell. Yeah. Then you'll really get an idea of what kind of quarterback he can be and is at the moment.
Here you go. Isaac says, I'll give you one more, Rod. Trey Owens connects with Livingstone for a touchdown. Hey, I'm with you on that. I agree. That's part of what my crazy prediction. I'm telling you, I think Trey Owens, he's cocky, but in a good way. He's the kind of way you want your quarterback. And I guarantee he's going to go out there and show out. And there's a reason, you know, Sark jumped on him early before he became the Houston, you know, offensive player of the year. He was on him before that because I think Sark saw what I saw and saw what I think a lot of people do. He's got a cannon of an arm, and then when you go talk to him, he's got that it. He's got some of that it quality, man. He's oozing some of that it quality. And that's what you want from QB. So I like that. I like that, Isaac. Good one.
That would have been the second week in a row if that happens. It happened last week, 45 yards.
That's what I'm saying. Dude, I'm telling you, I like it. I like that, man. I like that connection. That may be one early to start. All right, Coach, you got a crazy prediction for the people out there?
Not too crazy, but it's crazy for me because I know what y'all are thinking I'm going to say.
Something about the wide receivers?
Oh, absolutely. But I'm not. I'm going to tell you this. I feel a little bit like Lee Corso here, baby. I'm going to tell you, you don't know what's coming. If you don't know who he is now, you will know who he is after the game. He wears number 11, Colin Simmons, is going to make a name for himself. He's going to play so well in the spring game. My crazy prediction is they're going to be selling number 11 jerseys in the co-op. And that ain't Derek Johnson.
Oh!
I mean, Derek Johnson could and maybe should have his number retired, in my opinion. But right now, it's not retired. Colin Simmons is about to make it famous again.
Man, I love that. Okay, so if that is the case, and CJ's right too about his wild prediction, both of y'all went with the edge, defender.
Freshman edges.
Right, freshman edges. Is it fair to say that one of the things that we can all, I think, be able to, even people here on watching on Texas football right now, even if you're not coach and you don't have the football knowledge of coach or myself or CJ, everybody can recognize BGO, ball get off. Like you just looking at when the ball is snapped and who's getting off the ball first. It's real easy to see. It's like, oh, that guy was first off the ball. I think that's going to be different on the edges this year. I think it's going to be better for the vets, Baron Sorrell and Ethan Burke. But I think looking at what Trey Moore brings, you brought up Zena Emile Zulu, Coach. You brought up Colin Simmons, the prodigy. Them dudes are different. Their BGO is different. And I think you're going to notice that. And how about this? Kenny Baker, how about his crazy prediction? One of Bob's grandsons suits up for the spring game. Can we get a Shipley in there, man? Let's get another Shipley on the campus, baby. Come on, Coach. Which one's closest? Which one of them grandkids is closest? Whether it be
Stone. Stone, really? Shipley. Stone Shipley. Remember that name. That's okay. Jackson's. That's my oldest grandson. That's Jackson's boy. He got him playing 7-on-7 about every night of the week, man. Every weekend. That dude, he's a receiver. And, okay.
He doesn't have hands like his name, Coach, right?
I don't know how fast he's going to be, but the boy loves him some football. I know that.
Oh, he should be one of the Shipleys that plays defense. Yeah. He should be a Shipley that plays safety, dog. Stone Shipley?
Jackson is out there with him working every day. Uh-oh. They work in the yard or on the field almost every single day.
Footwork stuff?
Football stuff. Stone loves it. He loves everything about it. And he's playing with some really talented young players in that little 7-on-7. And so he had a wake-up call his first year, but he's starting to spread his wings a little bit. I don't know if he'll ever get on the 40, but he's the best I got at this point.
Rod, okay. You know he's never going to learn how to backpedal. He's going forward. No, he's got the cutters on his hands. He ain't never playing defense there, that's for sure.
Yeah, he's going to be a superb route run. He's already working footwork drills.
Oh, he's been doing that to walk.
Hey, Coach, how old is he again? How old is he?
He just turned 8.
I guarantee you at 8, he already knows the route tree. I guarantee you he does. I mean, like that. Give me a 6 route, son. All right.
Yeah, I guarantee he does.
That's awesome.
That's great. I love it. See, there you go. Look out for it. Hey, it's an easy name to remember. Stone Shipley, baby. I like that. That's a good name, too. That's the name of a star. I don't know what he's going to be a star in. Oh, it could be sports. It could be something else. But that's a celebrity name right there, man. Stone Shipley. But no, getting back to the edges, the BGO, watch out. It's one thing we can look out for. We can talk about, you know, what we expect to improve, what areas we expect to see improvement from this Texas football team from last year just to this spring game and just that offseason, obviously the spring part of the offseason. And I think, honestly, BGO is just that simple. You're going to see better ball get off on the edges, period. Because they're built different now. They're the guys they brought in are they have a different type of twitchy quickness off of the edge now. So that's also both you guys' prediction. Hopefully, I hope y'all are right about that. And that would also, you know, lend more credence to the argument of why those two guys left, Jamon Tapp and Billy Walton's like, no, man, they're deep. That's why we left. I'm trying to add a path to play, and I don't really see it in the next year or so with how deep they are on the edge right now. All right, good stuff there, guys. All right, I want to hit some questions here, and then we'll come back because I know my man CJ's got a couple of practice nuggets that I want to get into as well, because CJ's is as connected as anybody and always dropping great info for us. So I want to get into that coming up. But first, let's hit some of these questions. How about this one from my man UT Boy? UT Boy, shout out. Love me some UT Boy all the time. Over under on Jonte's touchdowns. Two. What we got? We got over under, CJ. Jonte Cook's touchdowns, baby. What we got here?
UT Boy. Yeah, I'd love for him to hit that over. That's going to be a tough thing to do with all these new faces, all these new wide receivers in the fold. I'm sure Sarkisian's going to find a way to, you know, kind of highlight, you know, some of these newcomers, Ryan Wingo, Isaiah Bond, you know, kind of getting the fans excited. Jonte had one last year.
Yeah.
Let's not forget, he probably had, what was it, a 60-yard touchdown from Malik Murphy a year ago. So he's got the experience in scoring in the spring game. I'd like to see him hit two, but it's going to be a tall stretch.
All right. Yeah, Coach, what are your thoughts about Jonte Cook? How about this? Who's going to be the leading receiver? I'll just take that question and add to it from UT Boy. Who's the leading receiver in the spring game? Who are we throwing out there? Leading receiver when it's all said and done.
You know,
I'm asking the right man.
That's for sure. I'm going to say Jonte Cook.
Ooh, you made UT Boy's day.
I mean, everybody's talking about these transfers, and we got one that may be as good as any of them.
Yep.
You know, and he knows all the hype that's been going on about these transfers. And, you know, it's going to be a great opportunity for him to show what he can do. But as we talked about last week, or I guess it was Monday, we talked about the fact that all those new guys are going to want to show their new fan base what they can do. It doesn't matter if they played in Alabama. It doesn't matter where they played. They're going to want to show the home crowd what they can do too. But I say UT Boy is right, and Jonte Cook is going to make a name for himself, and people will remember him and stop talking about all these transfers. Homegrown boy.
Hey, I like that. UT Boy is loving that. I like that. He loves it. What about you, CJ? You going the same route? Who do you think is going to be the leading receiver when it's all said and done on Saturday?
I'm going the portal route, Coach. Okay. I am. I'm going with Matthew Golden. I've heard great things about him so far. I was talking to a buddy of mine that, you know, earlier this week who got to see Matthew Golden in practice for a full session. He just, again, just very smooth off the line of scrimmage. We had the conversation of who's going to be that safety blanket, mm-hmm. a Jordan Whittington, a guy that you need, you know, yep. in that third and five to third and seven region. Who's going to be that guy that finds, you know, open areas in the zone or beats his man quickly and still finds ways to find the first down? Listen, we saw Jordan Whittington do it time and time again a year ago. Last year, that was kind of where Matthew Golden made his money at Houston. He was that underneath guy, that after the catchability guy. I think in this role, you won't see him as much underneath, but yeah. he'll still have, you know, some of that responsibility in the route tree. I think Matthew Golden right now, with what we've heard from Quinn talk about him and Steve Sarkisian talk about him, he's going to be that sure-handed guy, that reliable piece that you can use underneath a guy like Isaiah Bond or a Jonte Cook that kind of finds the open areas of a zone. I think he'll have a long day on Saturday, and I think he'll be able to find some success with not only Quinn, but with Arch as well.
Well, I like that. I'm going to go. All right. You know what? You guys both had good options there, good suggestions. I'll go with a young Ryan Wingo, and I think it's all off, mostly off one big play. But I think a young Ryan Wingo off one big play just has a big post route, double move down the sideline. I think we're going to have a lot of deep shots. I think, Coach, what did you say over-under on deep shots for you is going to be seven shots the whole game. I think I'm closer to nine deep shots, maybe three for all three of the quarterback. They all get three apiece. But I think Ryan Wingo is going to be the beneficiary of one of them. So I'll go with Ryan Wingo, but like I said, most of it off one big play. Might have three catches, but, you know, he'll 40, 50 of them on one, you know, of those yards on one big play. So I'll go Wingo I'm really excited about that. All right. Thanks for the question, UT boy. We appreciate it as always. How about this one from Alan? And I like this. It's almost a would you rather. What will get you more excited? 3 touchdown passes in tight coverage or 1-2 interceptions on really good tight window throws on good passes?
Hmm. I really wonder where you're going to go, Rod and Coach. I really wonder where you're going to go.
I'm going to go. Well, I'll start out. What will get me more excited would be the interceptions in really tight coverage. And I know because all spring game analysis is glass half full, glass half empty. I mean, if you're excited about the way the receivers perform, then you got to be a little depressed about the DBs and vice versa, whatever. All right. So I'll go with the DBs only because last year, your Achilles heel essentially was pass defense. That was your biggest liability defensively. That's why you lost the Oklahoma game. It's a big part of why you lost to Washington. Just couldn't hold up in pass defense. Sark wants to play more man coverage. He stated that. They want to play stickier coverage. They want to be tighter in man coverage. Play more press coverage if possible. Disrupt the timing of routes. Allow the defensive edges to be able to get home and get in the backfield and collapse the pocket and potentially get sacks on the quarterback, force more negative plays. So I would be more excited about the interceptions and the plays they make on the ball because they haven't done that since Sark has been here, guys. When was the last secondary Texas had that went after the football like that? I think we got to go back to, man, because listen, PK has, this defense has gotten gradually better every year. So last year was awesome. They were really good. That front seven was one of the best in the country. One of the best, actually, in recent Texas football history. But the secondary was still a liability. You got to go back to kind of like Todd Orlando's first season as a defensive coordinator, finding the last time the secondary was full of a bunch of ball hawks. Right, that went after the football. It's been a while on the 4 decades since you've had that kind of secondary, right? That had to be like 2017 or something like that. And that's what you need. You got Malik Muhammad. He's a ball hawk in his secondary. I think DJ Barron's guy, he's a great football investigator. Makuba is a disruptor, makes a lot of plays, but I don't know about on the football. It'd be great to see those guys, Terrence Brooks, some of those young players, start making plays on the football. So I'll go that route. What about you, CJ?
Yeah, I'm going to go the same route. Again, it's just kind of that gradual step. We know Quinn Ewers is going to be good. We know the offensive line will provide protection. We know Texas has a number of really talented wide receivers. It'd be great to see them get into a rhythm with Quinn and those new guys. But to your point, Rod, that secondary and really the deep ball a year ago was what prevented Texas from hitting its ultimate ceiling. I'd like to see more hands on passes, and coming away with turnovers would certainly set a good standard for going into the spring or into the summer months of what we know this defense can accomplish with help on the way that we figure to be up front.
Yep.
All right. I know y'all think I'm going to be like the farmer assistant coach. All right. That farmer assistant coach on Waterboy, wearing his overall, rubbing his nipples, with that ball in the air on those deep, deep touchdown passes. Okay. Slow motion. I could just see it. But that ain't what we need. What we need is some DBs picking off some passes from these big time quarterbacks and receivers. And so that's going to make me happier. I think all three of us agree that we need to see our defensive backs progress to the point where they're breaking on the ball and making big plays, especially when we're going ones, when we're going against that good offense. We need to see some DBs make some plays. And that would make me very happy.
Yep. Yeah. I'm surprised we're all on the same page. That's rare. There you go. So thank you for the question, Alan. We appreciate that. Another question here from James that I think is a pretty good one. And I want to throw this at CJ because I know CJ's talked a lot about this young man. We usually hear great things about Anthony Hill. I was curious about how LaFau has looked so far since the start of spring. Yeah. I know you were big on Leonga LaFau contending to win that job opposite Anthony Hill. CJ, what have you heard about Leonga LaFau's progress so far?
Yeah, no, he's had a good spring. Interestingly enough, I was expecting, like you said, Rod, for LaFau to be in that, that position to really make a run for that, interior defensive line spot, that extra linebacking spot next to Anthony Hill. To David Bendis' credit, he's done a tremendous job of holding him off. And it's not because of a lack of progression or development with LaFalle's game. It's because Benda's been that guy to say, yeah, I'm, you know, the oldest guy in the room here. This is my time truly to step on the field and make it my own. And he's done a very good job at that so far this spring. LaFalle, again, trimming down about 10 pounds from a year ago, I think is going to help him in terms of just maintaining that ability to move laterally, the quickness coming downhill, and of course in the passing game. He'll add back up before we get to the season this fall, right around 220 at the moment. He'll get up to about 227, 228 by the time week one rolls around. Just so you know, again, Texas has two guys with Hill and Benda that are right around 240. That's big. But fortunately, both of them can run very well. For LaFalle to get to that range, he has to make sure it's a steady climb, not something that he sees overnight or very quickly. I think he'll be a rotational piece in the middle of that defense. And I think he'll have a great opportunity with extended snaps on Saturday to make another strong impression in front of a home crowd.
Yeah, it's good stuff. Yeah, I've been really surprised that nobody's – I think they pushed Benda, but nobody's been able to overtake Benda. And right. That's a credit. That is a credit to Benda, no doubt. Sunday says more pressure, more interceptions. That is the working theory, Sunday. But here's the interesting thing, Sunny, is that Texas has actually been a top 10 team in the Power Five in pressures the last 2 years. But it's been in mostly interior pressure, right? You've had, you know, Kendrick Colburn, more Ojemo, Byron Murphy, Javondre Sweat. The hope is that your coach and my man CJ give their, you know, the crazy prediction that, you know, that it's coming from the edges, Zeni Omoyazulu and Colin Simmons, and that now the pressure from Texas, they'll still be able to create pressure, but it'll be coming from the edges. And it's a different kind of pressure, and then maybe that pressure will be more effective in Texas creating more negative plays on the other side of the line of scrimmage, tackles for loss and sacks, but also creating more takeaways. And you could argue, like, man, how is that going to happen? Well, like I said, it's theory, but the theory would be the pressure coming from the edges that maybe it forces that quarterback up in the pocket. If you play more press man coverage, taking away the inside leverage, all right, you're taking away the inside leverage. You got better coverage defenders at their safety positions now, so your safeties can cover the slots and cover the tight ends a little bit better. So theoretically, let's say you take away the middle of the field with your inside leverage on your corners on the boundary in the field, and with your safeties now being able to play better coverage overall, and you force the quarterback who's stepping up in the pocket to have to throw where the only space that is unoccupied on the field is outside the numbers, over the top of the cornerbacks. And that's a tough throw when you're stepping up in the pocket and a little bit on the move and have to do it. Now, I'm not saying that's how every down is going to go. I mean, no, quarterbacks make plays and not every play is going to go according to that. But theoretically, that's what you want to do. You want to force quarterbacks now to make the toughest throws on every passing down they can do. And the toughest throws are going to be those throws that are outside the numbers and really the only space, that area that should be open, is between the numbers and the sideline. And if the quarterback's feet are not set, that only Joe Burrows are making throws like that when their feet aren't set. And you're talking about the best quarterbacks in the country making throws, Caleb Williams making throws like that when their feet aren't set. Most quarterbacks, they're making that throw outside the numbers, feet got to be set with a pocket. All right, that actually is sound around them and not one that's collapsing around them. So that's the hope, is because they weren't able to create a lot of takeaways, and they weren't able to create a lot of sacks and negative plays, tackles for loss, with that interior pressure. It was there, it was consistent, but it didn't lead to a lot of takeaways, didn't lead to a lot of negative plays. And I think, guys, that's ultimately what they want this season, with the pressure coming from the edges. You'd like pressure coming from everywhere, ideally, but you don't have that. That's tough. I mean, that's Georgia and that's Ohio State. Texas ain't got there. They're not there yet. But right now, the pressure from the edges, the theory is that it may lead to more splash plays on defense.
Yeah. I'd like to say this, Rod, and that along the same lines, I want to see what our new NIL, our new portal receivers are going to do in terms of adjusting to the ball, because a great receiver can make the throw look really good.
Yeah.
Because if they have that knack to be able to know where that ball is going to go, that they can decelerate if the ball's a little short, they can decelerate, okay, to make sure. That's one thing that Xavier had trouble with two seasons ago. He couldn't adjust to the ball in the air. You had to throw it right to him while he was running because he wasn't experienced enough yet to be able to create, to keep that DB himself between the ball and the DB. And a great receiver can slow down or speed up. A lot of times they'll slow down enough to get the DB to slow down. Then they'll have a burst at the end to go get the ball instead of having a jump ball. So 50% of that, I'm going to say, is the receiver and his ability to almost be a basketball player. You know, when that ball's lobbed inside, can you shield off the defender where the ball, you know, can get into your hands?
Yeah, no, you're right, Coach. You know who did it real? A.D. Mitchell would do it really well.
Yeah.
He did good. He would almost create space like an NBA point guard where he would create. Yeah, exactly. That's exactly,
exactly right.
Right.
That's exactly right, son.
He creates this space. And yes, he would all I call it location acceleration, where he can be running but hit another gear once he locates the football in the air and hit another gear to separate from the defensive back to help out his quarterback for a ball that may have been considered underthrown, or to be able to, like you said, shield off an almost big body that cornerback and create enough space for an underthrown ball to also be able to drop in a bucket. He basically moves the bucket for the quarterback.
That's right. Yeah, that's a great point.
He's like, I'll create the space for you, you know, based on his body control is amazing. AD's body control is so fantastic. And he's combined that with his catch radius, and it just makes him so tough to defend. Like I said, any DB would have a tough time with AD Mitchell. But the thing that makes AD Mitchell so tough to deal with is that he is great at running routes and creating separation that way, but he doesn't need separation to win. You can throw it up to him in a 50-50 situation, and he can still win. Most receivers are one or the other. They're contested catch guys, 50-50 guys, or guys that create separation. Like Romeo Dunze is that. He's both. Like, he's like, I can 50-50 ball, or I can create separation. A lot of guys aren't necessarily both. X-Man's not both. The X-Man's not a contested catch receiver. He's a separation receiver.
Right.
AD's both. AD can do both, man. So, yeah, good conversation there. Good point there, Coach. Real quick, before we get to some more of the questions, appreciate you guys and keep them coming. Let's thank another one of our sponsors. And I actually got a chance to visit Flat Creek Estate Winery. I'll tell you about it here, but after I give you a little message from Flat Creek Estate. But 11 awards in 30 days, including double gold Grand Reserve and Texas Grand Reserve at the Houston Rodeo. Flat Creek Estate Winery is raking in awards, and it's just a few minutes from the heart of Austin, Texas. Select bottles of the wines by Flat Creek Estate are now available at your local Specs, and now you can get a taste of what they're all about. Flat Creek Estate is also a gorgeous venue hosting events for the whole family all spring. You can take in a number of different events at Flat Creek Estate. They have their winemakers dinner you can always be a part of, and also all of the different festivities they have there at Flat Creek. You can have Mother's Day out there at Flat Creek Estate. That's actually something that I'm trying to arrange right now. If you have a date weekend, you can have a staycation out there at Flat Creek Estate. It is just a fantastic place. So remember, folks, eat, drink, and be awesome at Flat Creek Estate. For more info, visit flatcreekestate.com. Visit flatcreekestate.com. And I was out there, actually. Me and Bobby went out there earlier this week just to go visit our sponsors. They were fantastic. But that venue, folks, is unbelievable. Like, it is.
One question. Go ahead. Did you sample any wine?
I did. No, I did sample. We had a spitter. All right. There was a spitter out there because I drove and drove back. So we had a spitter. So you get to sample and taste, and then you smell and you swish, and then you had to spit. Now, I did taste some wine. I did taste some. I didn't taste too much. I didn't overindulge. I wanted to make sure I was still all good. So we had the spitter there ready to go. But I do want to go out there again. It really is a great venue, man. I'm actually trying to arrange a Mother's Day trip out there for my wife and actually for my mom coming in town. So I'm getting out there to Flat Creek Estate, and I would encourage everybody else to do the same.
Rod, there ain't nobody in Burnett County who's getting that wine and looking at it swirling around. They ain't doing that stuff in Burnett County where I'm from.
So, Coach,
you're straight, baby.
I was trying to be fancy. We, you know, we're out there with our sponsors. So, but usually, yeah, I'm the same way.
We ain't fancy in Bernie County. No, yeah, we ain't sloshing no wine around. We're just drinking it right out of the bottle, baby. Boone's Farm style.
Hey,
you know?
Hey, sometimes, Coach, it didn't even need to be a bottle. It could be a bag. You know what I mean? It's like, you know how that goes? Hey,
man, that's your side. Like, that's right. Really,
yeah, you ain't no
kind of. He knows in Bernie County, boys.
But Flat Creek Estate, they are. That is legit. It's really great wine. My wine, my wife loves wine, and she's actually enjoying a couple of bottles I got from out there. So thank you to the good folks out there at Flat Creek Estate. All right. Let's get to some more of these questions here. This comes from Cisco Diaz. Cisco, thank you for the question. During the BYU game, Texas used a three-back set, and it was successful. Could we see that more with so much talent in the running back room? Thank you, Cisco, because you know I'm always down. Thank you, Cisco.
Rod, in heat on that one, baby. He's like,
oh. Rod, you tap that one up. We had the screen for the ad just now. Did you go ahead and type that one up while reading it?
I know I did. Trust me, it's been up there for a while. It came in at 4:12, so I just let it go. I was like, you know what, let it go. Because y'all know, y'all can think I'm just trying to start the show talking two-back sets. But no, they have used the three-back sets. They have used that 31 personnel package. And remember, they used it versus Alabama that year that Texas hosted Alabama in start second season. I think that's the first time I seen Texas actually break it out. So they have it in the package. And I do think it'll be some amalgamation of C.J. Baxter, of Jaden Blue, and then what we hear from Trey Weiser, because they love what he's done. But I won't talk about it too much, but I am hearing, and we'll get into some practice nuggets here from CJ in just a second. I am hearing that they are using more two-back sets, more 21 personnel, more 20 personnel. And you guys know I've been yelling about that for about 4 or 5 years now. I think it's a great thing that they're using it in spring. The reason it will be good they're using it in spring, that would say it's more than just a boutique novelty thing. That would say now it's becoming more of a staple, all right? It's becoming more of a staple and a go-to personnel grouping for Sark. And that was not the case for Sark prior to his time with the Atlanta Falcons, following Kyle Shanahan and his 21 personnel, and Sark putting his spin on it, which was the pony package, which is two tailback sets instead of a traditional fullback. And ever since then, at least since he's come to Texas, he has been using some of the same concepts. But also when he brought in Brendan Marion, who runs a go-go offense, a two tailback set, which is a triple option run game that is mixed with a West Coast passing game, Sark's offense, West Coast passing game. And now he's taking some of those go-go principles. It only makes sense. And you're, like you said, you're stacking the running back room. Just go like you keep stacking that room. You ain't going to be able to keep all them guys unless you play them. So you got to play them. And the best way to play a lot of them is two tailback sets. And I learned from Nick Saban, heard Nick Saban say it, so I figure it's gospel at this point. He's the GOAT. He said, it is really tough to go against two tailback sets because we don't practice against it. We're practicing against spread sets now. We're practicing against a lot more pro-style stuff. But even in the NFL, guys don't run a lot of 21 personnel. That's still in the NFL that teams are in the minority that are doing that, like the 49ers and the Miami Dolphins. That's it. That's teams that are in the minority, so you don't practice against it a lot. So what Nick Saban is saying is, he said, if a team is running that, we have to designate special practice time just to have them familiarize themselves with the angles of two tailback sets, with the blocking of two tailback sets, and the leverage points going up against two tailback sets, because you never do it. And he even remarked that he had a game going up against Tennessee a couple of years ago. Tennessee came out in a goal line situation in I formation, just simple I formation, old school 21 personnel. He said his players didn't know how to line up, had to call a timeout. Players didn't know what they were doing. Like,
oh, hey, Rod, we need a Charles White on our roster in that running back room, and then we can have our America package. We can have red, white, and blue.
Oh! That's
America package.
Well done. Well done, go. Coach. I love it. I'm all about it, man. Somebody said, I've never seen Cisco Diaz and Rob Babers in the same room. hey, Coach, I like that idea, man. Trust me. Savion Red, and I'll say this, I'll be done with it. I do believe that Sark's trying to pull the okie doke on us. I think Savion Red gained that weight for a reason. I think Sark wants him to be his version of Kyle Juszczyk, a modern fullback who can run routes downfield because he used to be a wide receiver, not afraid of physicality, which Savion Redd is not. You can put him at fullback and probably not afraid to be unselfish and change positions because he's already done it. And what do you have to do? Be at fullback, unselfish, because you're going to be blocking for people like a Rojo, like a power back. I think that's his plan. He won't let us in on it, and maybe I'm off, but I remember the first time I saw the 6-0 line package, and they asked Sark about it, and Sark said, yeah, we're just doing that for tight end depth. And I said, that don't make no damn sense. What are you talking about tight end depth? There's an offensive lineman there. You got better tight. What about Juan Davis? You got to feel like, what the hell, man? Coach, you looking at tight end depth, and you put an O lineman in front of me? Nope, Sark was using his 6-0 line package, the Big 12, Big 11, and he didn't want to unveil it without troubleshooting it and testing it first. And then he broke it out versus Alabama later on that year. So Sark, every now and then, he wants to play a little coy, and I just think he's not being disingenuous. I just don't think he wants to reveal exactly what his vision is sometimes. I think he's got a vision for you, for my man, Savion Redd. All right, I'm done. I'm done ranting about it. We're done talking about two tailback sets. Daniel wants to know, any word on if the spring game is being canceled? I don't think they're going to reveal that before the day of, because they wouldn't know. They can't trust the weather guessers. Because if they're wrong and it's a sunny day, people are going to be upset because they canceled their spring game weekend. And if people are going to be in town, they have the old Bevo Boulevard thing that CDC has been setting up for months. And there's a lot involved. So even if the game doesn't happen, there's so much spectacle around it that I think they'll still go. They got a concert. Isn't that a concert, CJ, too?
Oh, yeah. Longhorn City Limits. Being constructed today, you know, they had meetings today. Chris Del Conte, the athletics department, Steve Sarkisian, they had meetings today in case weather was too bad, what the plan would be. The best guess I have right now is they would ship everybody over to the bubble for the scrimmage. It'd be closed to the public, unfortunately. Media likely not able to attend either, and they would carry out the spring game, quote unquote, in the bubble, just to get those guys one more run through, one more live action game situation for the spring, and then shut things down right after that. But that will be, again, at the 11th hour, you know, final minute decision. They, like you said, Rod, CDC and the Texas Athletics Department has put a lot of effort into the spectacle that goes on anytime there's a game at DKR. So unless there's really bad weather and they cancel it ahead of time, it's going to be a last minute deal. Right there.
LL wants to know, if two back is pony, what is three? It's a donkey. It's the donkey package.
Told you what it is. It's America.
America. Yeah, we America. Get the red, white, and blue. Man, you're right. We can get Jaden Blue, Savion Redd, and then get some white in there. Then, yeah, we can go American package.
I have a son right about now.
Yeah, there you go. I want to call it the donkey. You got something better than the donkey package? Three of them is a donkey out there, man.
I was going to go the other way, Rod. I thought you would call it the Stallions or something. I mean,
oh, that's good, too. That's good.
You got the pony and the stallion package. If you call it the pony and the donkey, I'm looking at, we got a deal.
Yeah, baby. What I look like when I walk down on the field right there, Mr. Poolback.
It's a mini horse. It's a miniature horse. I love that. Yeah,
that was great.
I like stallion is better than the donkey. I think the donkey is just kind of funky, but you're right. Stallion is probably the better way to go there. All right. Hey, Travis hit us up. Thank you, Travis, for the super chat. We appreciate it. Can't wait to see y'all at Victory Lap. Yes, on Saturday, we'll be at Victory Lap. It is 11 a.m., I believe. We're going to be at Victory Lap, starting up the festivities there. So last time I talked to you, Rod, we were about K-State. You're right about K-State. Yeah, that was a scary one. I knew we'd pull out that K-State win. I knew it was going to be tight. It certainly was. Always is with the purple kryptonite, man. Purple kryptonite. Always. TCU, same way. Purple kryptonite. I'm glad we're getting away from the purple kryptonite. Anybody in the SEC wear purple? Not really, right? No purple in the SEC? I don't think so. All right, we're good then.
Not to Clemson. Okay. Gets in.
Let's, before we get done, one more sponsor I do want to thank here before we get done. The Showdown Returns, talking about the SEC. Hot off the presses, gentlemen. Hot off the presses, ladies and gentlemen. Everybody can take advantage of this. There's a brand new commemorative edition magazine available, The Showdown Returns. It's a season preview of the return of the Texas A&M rivalry. Use the QR code. All right, use the QR code here for free shipping. All right, you can use the QR code for free shipping. You can also get the magazine at select grocery stores across the state. Again, use the QR code for free shipping for the Showdown Returns, playing the Aggies once again. It was fun back in my day playing the Aggies. CJ, it's going to be kind of new to CJ. CJ is so young. CJ was a youngster when the rivalry ended. Was it 2011, 2012? How old were you then, CJ? Like 12 or
13?
14, yeah, 13, 14. 13, something like that, yeah. Oh, LSU, hey, we're getting, right? LSU was the, damn it. He's right, Richard. Damn you, Richard.
We're getting hammered on LSU. Oh, my gosh. What?
Yeah, no, you're right. Hey, I was just asking the question about the purple. You're right. So hopefully the purple kryptonite does not translate into the SEC. Had too much of it in the Big 12.
But they're
right,
white LSU, and yellow.
Yeah. LSU does have LSU does have the purple. You're right. Thank you guys for keeping us honest. We appreciate that. All right, a couple of our more questions, and then we'll get ready to wrap this thing up, gentlemen. Someone says, are there less running QBs on the schedule this year? That is a good question. I believe there are fewer dual threat quarterbacks. I got to go back and check, so don't just hold me to that. It's right. I mean, you think about it, CJ. I got to go back and look. I believe there are fewer, though, overall.
There are. Looking conference and Michigan, you know, your Power 5 opponents, Alex Orji will be a running quarterback. Mississippi State's going to be Blake Shapen. Texas is familiar with him. He's an agile guy. He can get outside the pocket. He's not super athletic. He's not a guy, especially with his injury history, that you're going to fear too much. Of course, Jackson Arnold, good athlete, not a great runner. Same with Connor Wegman, who Texas will play later on at Texas A&M. Again, Carson Beck, good athlete, not a runner by trade. Vanderbilt's going to have an interesting quarterback battle there. Graham Mertz, I mean, he's a Big Ten quarterback. He's not going to beat you by his legs. Arkansas, I believe his name is Talon Green from Boise State. He's a good runner. He will be a guy Texas will have to game plan around a little bit. That'll be an interesting one. But this SEC schedule for the Longhorns in terms of quarterback athleticism, very favorable. You don't have to play Jalen Milroe. You don't have to play Brady Cook from Missouri. You don't have to play Jackson Dart from Ole Miss. Those are probably the three biggest rushing threats on good offensive teams that Texas dodged, and therefore you're looking at a schedule, at least from a running perspective, that favors the Texas defense in terms of their quarterback opposition.
Yeah, no, you're right, because Dylan Gabriel, right, that was one of the ways they broke Tennessee, turned him into a runner, worked against Texas. We thought – that K-State would run a lot with Will Howard and with I forgot the young backup's name, was really good. Avery Johnson, thank you very much. They really couldn't get the running game more because Texas game planned really well to neutralize the threat they're running at quarterback. And Texas faced a couple more, but I thought Texas did pretty good, other than obviously Dylan Gabriel against quarterbacks that were running. But Dylan Gabriel was – that was the most yards he had rushed for, and I believe the most attempts he had in his career. So it was truly breaking tendency in Texas. Wasn't prepared for it. It was a great move by them. Some LL says Florida probably has some DJ Lagway packages by then. That's a great point, too. You could have quarterback changes by then or something like that. All right, one more question, and we'll get ready to wrap this thing up, gentlemen. Joseph here says, in terms of the transfer portal, could we start taking smaller classes that are made up of less developmental players and then supplement with the portal? What are your thoughts? I know Sark is big on still the organic recruiting of traditional recruiting being the heart and soul, the lifeblood of the program, and you know, using the transfer portal when necessary to supplement needs of urgency in the roster.
I think you're going to see teams that are struggling, teams that are trying to get to the level of talent that we're at, that are going heavy in the portal. I mean, when you've got it ginning like we have it ginning right now, I think you're exactly right, Rod. You fill in some key spots with the portal, but I think Sark is going to continue to recruit high school players and develop them and then just fill in as need be. Of course, you know, the great thing about it is as you continue to have great recruiting classes, you don't have to hit them. You don't have to hit the portal.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
just occasionally and defensive lineman, we've talked about this before. That's always going to be the toughest position to recruit. It really is. It's really hard to find good defensive linemen that are active, that have good feet, that are aggressive. It's the toughest position in football to recruit, to find players, in my opinion. So I think you're always going to see us dipping in the portal for defensive linemen, possibly. Other than that, you're just filling in holes. As I've said before on this show, there's times when I was at Texas, there wasn't even a recruiting prospect that we offered in the state of Texas because they're just so hard to find sometimes. We had to go outside the state. Man. To find the level of player that we felt like we needed. So I think you'll continue to see us fill in spots, but there's no doubt Sark has already kind of drawn a line in the sand and said, I'm going to recruit great high school players. We're going to develop them.
Yeah, no doubt. You don't want to lose that relationship with the Texas high school football coaches, as Coach Shipley can attest as well. That's a very personal one. Okay, real quick, before we get out of here, thank you guys for the question. CJ, give the folks a couple of practice nuggets that you got from sources about spring practice for the Longhorns.
Yeah, absolutely. Rod, we talked about it, the 12 now. We saw some 21 personnel as well. It was today, it was Juan Davis and Gunnar Helm, the first two guys out there for the tight end position in 12 personnel, 21 personnel. It was Trey Wisner as well as CJ Baxter. And you saw Jaden Blue filter in for Wisner every now and then. Of course, both of them were used in terms of that motion guy, yeah. In which Keelan Robinson was likely in that role a year ago. Really interesting. Again, not a super physical practice, but physical enough. I was told Matthew Golden had a great catch today, a one-handed grab on a corner route on a pass from Quinn Ewers for a touchdown in the red zone area. More of the same. The defense looks very good in between the 20s. But once you get into the red area, it feels like Sarkisian's really starting to cook things up a little bit. Quinn Ewers having a really good day in the offensive line, you know, kind of having their way with the interior group there. So the offense looking good in the red zone. Matthew Golden again, big catch. Balls on the ground a little bit again today. It was an issue last Saturday. A pair of fumbles from Texas running backs, a couple of drops from receivers. We'll see if, you know, this pattern becomes a trend. But right now, just, you know, I think it's a little bit more of these guys hitting that spring ball wall with the spring game being that final row or, you know, kind of parade eventually.
Yeah. No, just the one interesting Juan Davis at that other tight end position along with Gunnar Helm. And I really want to see how much 12 personnel Sark is going to use this year without JT Sanders as his muse with that offense, because JT Sanders is such a matchup nightmare. I like Gunnar Helm a lot, like Juan Davis. They are not the matchup nightmare that a JT Sanders was. So it's going to be interesting to see what Sark does there. All right, any closing comments here, gentlemen, before we get out of here? Coach, you got any last comments for the people before we close it out?
No, man, just as we've talked about earlier this week, it's an exciting time. I mean, this is going to be, if the weather will hold out, it's going to be a really big crowd. I'm afraid the weather might keep some people from coming out, but I hope everyone will come out and support these guys, and we'll have a break in the weather. I think 1 o'clock, you know, I think the further you go into the day from looking at my app, weather app, the greater the chances are, and you get into 100% that evening. So maybe we can get it in. I hope we can, but it's going to be a fun day for us to see who these guys are. And there's always going to be one or two guys that will really show some flash of brilliance, and you'll go, oh, okay. Yeah, I wasn't thinking about that guy, or I didn't know he could do that or whatever. And so I look for one or two of those guys to try to make a name for themselves.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, CJ, you got any last news, notes, nuggets, any last comments for the people before we close it out?
Yeah, a couple things. Brent Orange Horn, I see your comment. Did Matthew Golden have an option or a double pass today? In practice, he did. He found Isaiah Bond for a touchdown on a double pass. So there might be your trickery a little bit. David Keith Williams, your comment about Gunnar Helm. I was told today he looks very much like a professional on the Texas roster right now. You can tell he's been around the block a few times. He carries himself very well. He will be a guy that I was told will play in the NFL. And then on top of that, Texas will be receiving a big-time interior defensive line visit from Dominic Williams, April 23rd through 25th. That was announced just now by Hayes Fawcett. Of course, he'll be at Oklahoma spring game this weekend. Oklahoma's going to make a big push for Dominic Williams to for him to be their only visit this weekend. That will be the push for him. Of course, we talked about him entering the portal a day ago. Texas is very interested here. He's a guy that's very disruptive. 19 pressures, 3 sacks a year ago, plays 53% of his snaps in the A-gap, exactly what Texas is looking for. Nice. Right now. He will be on campus next week, early in the midweek, for his trip to Texas. Of course, Colorado, LSU, Missouri, Oregon, all other schools looking to get visits as well. But big news breaking right as we end the winning drive here. Texas looking to get, or at least add some help there to their defensive line group. That's an All-American, freshman All-American, and All-Big 12 selection right there, Dominic Williams.
Hey, good stuff there, CJ. Appreciate that. And also appreciate all of you guys out there for joining us. Appreciate all of your support. The On Texas Football family is growing. It's growing because of you guys. We also got to thank our sponsors again. We want to thank Flat Creek Estate. Go to check out flatcreekestate.com. Also, we do want to thank our wonderful sponsor, our new sponsor, thecarrotconcierge.com. Go check that out as well, especially for Mother's Day. And thank the good folks at the Showdown Returns. Don't forget about that brand new fantastic collector's item magazine that is paying tribute to the rekindling of the Texas A&M rivalry. All right, for my man Matthew behind the scenes too, doing a great job. He is the real MVP. This would not happen without him. He's fantastic. For my man CJ Golden, for Coach Bob Shipley, thank you guys for everything. And until next time, hook 'em.